Welcome to the School Sucks Project,
a podcast, YouTube channel, and an online community
dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
Ven hacia arriba, dime que miras, con el sol subiendo, definitivamente.
Hello, friends. This is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. Today is September 7th. After today's release, only three episodes of the podcast remain. Two are already recorded. Today's show represents something that I have always wanted to do, something that has become possible over the last year, thanks to the participants in our University private community, which you can learn more about in the show notes. There are a couple of ways to join, and there is space left for new members. But what is that thing that I always wanted to do? It's to put out a podcast that I am not in at all. Now, I know I'm talking right now. I'm doing the introduction to the show. But once this actual conversation starts, you will notice that I am not there. And this is a good thing. Think about it. You've been listening for 12 years. You probably had it with me. But with all sincerity, when I started this podcast in 2009, I spoke with a very authoritative teacher's kind of voice. And through the years, I was fortunate enough to attract an audience of, yeah, there were some teens, but mostly adults. And people who, when all is said and done, I learned as much from them as they probably learned from the show, if not more. And here at the end, I get to provide an example of this great achievement of making myself irrelevant. And I'm so grateful for the people in this community who, through their hard work, knowledge, skill, and wisdom, helped make that possible. Now, I'm currently in the process of discovering a new vehicle for a new type of relevance more applicable to our current age. But the material that we've produced here over the last 12 years is of increasing relevance and could be extremely helpful to a growing number of people who can no longer ignore their frustration and dissatisfaction with government schooling and higher education. We have answers. And so the School Sucks Project will continue with your help. The ways you can help: joining this community or becoming one of our supporting listeners. All the information on how to do that is in the show notes. Moving on. So every month in the University, we have been doing a book club. Huge thanks to Carrie for coming up with this idea and being sure to execute month after month. And you have heard some book club discussions in the podcast feed before. Some we did not release, like The Six Pillars of Self-Esteem, but some we did, like Why We Drive, one of my favorite shows in recent memory. So today it's a small group discussion. It's Carrie, Larry, Bobby, and Nikki. And the topic is Robert Cialdini's 1984 book, Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion. And the book focuses on six principles of influence. And here's the key. These are means of influence that the influencee often does not notice. Cialdini makes these six principles explicit, not just so you can spot them, but also so you can use them. It's kind of like Cialdini traveled through time into the future and ripped off the emotional manipulators for hire concept that, of course, I do with Nathan Fraser. There will be one more episode of that series before we wrap up the podcast. It will be the next show, in fact. And because these very thoughtful and cooperative participants in the University Book Club are certainly not responsible for giving you a full review and explanation of the book, I wanted to take some time in this introduction to just run through Cialdini's six principles of influence. And instead of using my own notes, I'm just going to go to a website called Her Business, where I found the most simple and succinct definitions of each of the six principles. So you'll have a little bit of knowing, and then we can get right on to this great conversation that I really enjoyed editing and listening to. And Her Business, I believe, is a website for distinguished German gentlemen interested in business. No, I'm wrong. It is H-E-R, not H-E-R-R, business. So it's herbusiness.com. I'm very sorry, ladies. That was a very reciprocal assumption. Number one, reciprocity. When we give something, whether it is information, food, money, or whatever, the other party is compelled to give something back equitably, what you have given, in order to cancel out the obligation. Be the first to give service, information, and concessions, and your customers will repay you in kind. Two, scarcity. Possessing scarce or exclusive items conveys information about one's status, intelligence, and wealth. As objects of some value become less available to people, they increase in value. By being aware of the unique information that you possess and then using it strategically, you can harness this rule. Number three, authority. Authorities gain their power through conditioning, an experience common to us all. Even as adults, we become susceptible to individuals in positions of power. By establishing your business position through professionalism and credentials, you are more in a position to exert influence. In the book, actually, Cialdini talks about Milgram at this stage and the electric shock experiments that we've covered in great detail on the show before. Number four, consensus. This is listed with several different names. Social proof is similar. When deciding what to do in an unfamiliar situation, it is helpful to look to others in that situation for an answer. You can unleash people power by providing information on trends and similar mass movements of others and by showing evidence of other successes. Testimonials on how good your product is serve as social proof of the benefits of the product. Cialdini talks about the Ash conformity experiments. And if you're unfamiliar with that, this was an experiment, I think it was run 60s or 70s. It might have been run a few different times. But everybody, I think there'd be like five or six people, and almost all except one, would be Confederates. They would be in on the experiment. And then the dupe would sit in, and basically what it was is, all right, group, tell me which one of these strips of paper sticks is the longest of the bunch. And they'd be shown a bunch of strips or sticks, and the group would choose the longest. Well, all the Confederates would pick a stick, and I think it got worse as the experiment went on, that clearly was not the longest stick. And eventually the dupe would agree with the Confederates' wrong answer just because of social pressure. The next one is commitment and consistency. We tend to like individuals who act consistently because it allows us greater control in a situation. When a person's behavior is relatively consistent, we know what to expect from them. By having your customers make a small commitment, you're more likely to be able to influence them to add to this commitment. Their need is to stay consistent, and their word comes into play here. And the last one, Cialdini calls liking. We tend to like and be influenced by people like ourselves. That is because they reinforce who we are, what we believe in, and what we value. Uncover similarities and opportunities for cooperation with your clients, and you will not only achieve your goals, but also those of your customer. Okay, so now we will move on to the Univercity Book Club discussion of Robert Cialdini's influence. It does not start right at the beginning. I cut it to a point where the group is discussing the discovery that the book was originally published in 1984, 37 years ago. All right, thanks for listening, and I will talk to you again soon.
Yeah. Electric chaos, don't question it, for us all retort chaos. Greetings from meetings we may run. Decisions of needing invasion. It's easy to see the persuasion. More than I can say on this electric chaos. And greetings from meetings we may run. Decisions of needing invasion. It's easy to see the persuasion. More than I can say on this electric.
1984.
Yeah, so this thing is way ahead of the curve.
It's like if you watch Citizen Kane, you know, you don't realize how it like undergirded like so many movies. Yeah.
So if you read any book on sales or persuasion after this, it's like they steal everything from this. It's pretty funny. So.
Yeah, that's what I thought was kind of the same thing with Citizen Kane, right? When I watch Citizen Kane, I'm like, the first time I watched it, I was like, I don't get it. I don't get why people think that this is, you know what I mean? And that, but then I realized, okay, a lot of other films are taking inspiration from this film. And that's why it is so, because at the time, before all of these other films that I've seen, this was like a new thing. So yeah, I'd say the same kind of feeling with this book. So we can go again and get started. I just wanted to, first of all, like just kind of lay out the chapters, because, you know, he kind of like breaks it down into principles, I guess, or like tricks is kind of how I see it. So there was reciprocation, liking, social proof, authority, scarcity, commitment and consistency. And the last chapter was unity. And when I was looking stuff up, a lot of people don't mention the unity part. Like, that's kind of left out. I don't know why that is.
What version do you have? I don't, like, I have like the old unity.
I may have been reading a new version.
Yeah, my chapters are reciprocation, commit and consistency, social proof, liking, authority, and scarcity. So okay. Unity, I'm like...
Well, I guess I read the new new and expanded is what my book says. Okay. Well, that makes sense to me, because when I was looking it up, I was like, what are the, and I kept seeing like the six principles of, and I'm like, but the has seven chapters. All right. So I have, I know more than you guys. Yeah. That's what
I'm going to be honest. I think I have your version too.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah, I listened to the audiobook, so.
Oh, nice. Well, I did too. Like, I started reading it, and then I listened to the audiobook because I was driving a lot, which I don't normally do. So I'm kind of like, I'm a little nervous because I don't have highlights like I normally have. And so, yeah.
Same. I usually take notes when I do this, so.
Yeah, it's hard for me to take notes on an audiobook. I haven't figured out how to do this, because I usually listen to an audiobook when I'm driving, and I don't know how to take notes without wrecking my car. So, yeah. So anyway, so what do you guys want to go around and just say, like, your first thoughts, like just top level thoughts, or we can just start into different parts of this, like the different principles, I guess, that really resonate with you, or that maybe you gravitate to more?
I am not a person with regrets. I kind of own every decision I've made and encapsulate that into my person. So I don't spend a lot of time thinking what if in regards to life. But if I ever had the ability to go back and do one thing, it would be to give myself this book at 12 years old and just say, this is everything you need to know for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
How much that would have changed in my social and psychological development that, you know, it's great discovering this stuff in my 30s like I did. But had I discovered it, like, say, when I was dating, like the confidence changes it would have been, like understanding all the psychology.
Mm.
Could have definitely changed my life in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Like, do you think that, because when I was reading it, a lot of the things I was like, a lot of it was kind of cringy to me, but seeing someone like use these principles to actually influence someone. But you're saying that you think that you felt like it could like actually have bolstered your social.
It would have been empowering. Because like, if you understand why people think the way they do, see, that was the other part. Like, every part of this is a double-edged sword. Mm. So you can totally utilize this to go and influence people, or you can totally use it to deconstruct how you're being influenced, you know?
Right.
There's also, it's one of the things that Stapleton always says, and it's hard to argue with it. It's the fact is, well, people are going to do this because this is how human psychology works, one way or the other. And so you could let the Bill Gates of the world go out and influence them, or you could go out and influence them in better ways.
Yeah.
it's to me, it's got it's value neutral in that this is just how we work, and knowing how we work is you know better than not knowing how we work.
Right. Yeah. And that's that kind of speaks to an idea that I've been struggling with recently, with this idea of idealism versus reality. Right. So if I am like in an ideal world, there wouldn't be public school, there wouldn't be a government, there wouldn't be, you know, all of these things that kind of make life pretty shitty for people. But the fact that there is those things, for a really long time, I've thought, okay, well, I just will ignore them. I just won't let them affect me. But the older I get, the more I realize that it's so important to actually live in the reality and to figure out how reality works and work within it to actually create a better world. For
look, I can't go and undo the Kardashians.
Right. And they're affecting people, right? So how do you deal with that? Like, how do you counteract that in a positive way?
By having more of a voice. That's all you can do.
Yeah.
I'm really curious Bobby's thoughts on it, you know, having gone around it again.
Yeah, my biggest question for Bobby is this book the reason that you took jujitsu?
No, it's not why I took jujitsu.
Because so he talks about it a lot. And when I was reading, I was like, Bobby...
This book I found in my mid 20s. So it was kind of big within the, you know, the pickup artist scene. So it's kind of one of those things, like if you get into sales, you get into, you know, like picking up women, it's very much of a, this is the foundation, you know, NLP and stuff like that. I just re-skimmed it this time, but I've read it like 3 or 4 times. Mm-hmm. So even before this, and it's kind of foundational to the way I think. Because a lot of the stuff I've integrated into who I am, and I just kind of like, okay, well, this is my advantage. You know, some people are tall, some people are good looking, some people are smart, right? You know, and
probably internalized influence.
definitely some of it I can, like the reciprocation is definitely one, like that one has stuck with me more than anything. So basically it's kind of two things. It's got like the reciprocation one is like my favorite one. People like the whole idea of like the in-group societal norms that we have. If somebody is not influenced by reciprocity, I really don't want to be around them. Right. So not only to where it's like, it's something to where I can help people become nicer to me, I can also find out if there's somebody, you know, I want to be around. Right. If, for example, if, you know, as an adult, it's tough to make friends just because everybody has lives at this point and we kind of are who we are. So unless you kind of just click with somebody right away and you both have free time at the same time, it's like near impossible. Right. So like I had, you know, a couple friends, you know, from jujitsu that, you know, they knew to the area and they wanted to go out. And so, you know, I'm married, but I don't have any kids. Right. So I went out a couple times and like, we'll go around and be like, all right, hey man, here you go. Let me get you a beer. And they're like, oh, no, I can't. I was like, I just shut up and let me get it. You know, I just tell them that. Right. And then like later on, they're okay, I got this one for you. Right. And it's because like they don't want to be beholden to me. All right. So they feel that tug. Right. If they didn't, then I kind of like, okay, are the users type of aspect of it. So, like I said, with this one, like a lot of the things in there are just so, like I said, it's just so foundational to any type of communication. Cause it's back to like, cause I also got into this when I was into sales, you know, 15 plus years ago. And, you know, this is where I learned that everything is sales. Everything's persuasion. Either like, if I'm trying to sell you something, either I sell you it or you sell me that you're not going to buy it. Right. And it's kind of like a way to view it very, you know, in almost a meta sense that it is everything. And then it just kind of like, it kind of lets you see through things too. Like, cause my other favorite one was the authority one, you know, the Milgram's experiment. And on that one, there's a real cool, we can get into it later. Darren Brown did a thing called The Heist, and it is awesome where he, you know, uses this and he uses some NLP stuff to where like he weeds people out. And then as we just saw with the, you know, in the authority, like if somebody's wearing a white coat, you know, people believe them more. So And I reread a couple of chapters and I'd see if it was dated. It wasn't as dated as I thought it was. Cause like, I remember like the reciprocity one of the stories that they tell was the buying the Coke and the getting the donations. And so he bought somebody a Coke and then they'd get a dollar. That's what the average person would donate. Well, back then a Coke was 10 cents. So it's like, so you were getting like a 10 times value, but they've done the math. It's like three or something. Right. And then stuff too. So like I use like the commit and consistency. I use that all the time. Cause I'm active in the Libertarian Party. So I try to get small acts. This is who, you know, once you get the small acts, it's like the whole foot in the door, the puppy at home, you know, these type of things. Like I said, I mean, to me, it still holds up. I thought it was better than Persuasion, which is his other book.
Is that one worth going through?
I don't think so. I don't know. It's tough to like the Persuasion is kind of got to be, it's more about laying the groundwork than it is persuading, you know? So it's like, if you think of like, if you want to go, we want to go like with the COVID thing. So you have the germ theory and the terrain theory. Persuasion is more of terrain theory to where you like guide them to say yes where there's like, it's like all about setting it up. And
which, that sounds super interesting.
I mean, maybe I need to reread it, but I remember not being like, oh, this isn't super useful. Whereas this book here was like, it's actionable. Like you can take these six of them and you can apply them, any of them, almost any time. And plus, you can see it everywhere too, you know, so it just helps you see through, you know, when you're getting advertised also. So it's like they haven't changed, right? I mean, it's like insane. So
can you explain just real quickly what NLP is? I don't know that I'm familiar with that term.
So NLP is neuro-linguistic programming. It's basically your mind. Treat your mind like it's a computer, and you have programs that you run, right?
And he talks about that in the book. It's like that click whir kind of idea.
Yeah. So like the way NLP would go, like if I'm trying to persuade you on something, think of like kids are masters at this, right? If their parent is in a bad mood, they're not going to ask them for money or anything like that because they're in a bad mood. They wait till they're in a good mood, right? So with NLP though, it's like the fundamental like concept that I took away from it is, okay, so when you remember a song, you can hear it, right? You can kind of, you know, when you remember a picture, you can see it. But when you remember a feeling, you have to recreate that feeling. So therefore, from the standpoint of sales and persuasion or in seduction, you want to create the feeling before you go for the sale. So for example, is like if, you know, you meet a woman, you know, you meet her on the first date and you want to sleep with her, you need to like make her feel adventurous, courageous, strong, right? Before you would do any of that, before you would do any of the, you know, the techniques. And it's pretty lame how you get people to do it. You know, talk about, you know, have you ever taken any trips? Have you any time where you just felt amazing? And then people just start telling you about it. And because nobody gets asked those types of things. Nobody asks people about their feelings.
That's the whole idea. Like, that's what they always tell you, you know, to be a good listener. Like you should always ask the person about themselves because that helps them open up. Everybody wants to talk about themselves. No one wants to talk about you. They want to talk about them.
Well, I mean, and when you talk to somebody, if you're listening, you might as well just be downloading everything that they need to sell to them.
You're telling me everything I need to do the job. Yeah. I mean, that's a thing in copywriting, right? Like we're always talking to the person and learning about what they want. Right. And then spitting that back out to them so that it makes them feel a certain way. And then they buy the product. What about you, Larry? Do you have thoughts? First thoughts?
No, not really. I kind of listened to this book passively in the background while I was working and I didn't have a chance to really take any notes. So I may have a couple comments here or there, but overall, I enjoyed listening to it.
I feel like read it with this lens of which I feel like I'm doing a lot recently is kind of reading everything or seeing everything through a lens of trauma, childhood trauma. I've just been kind of steeping myself in that kind of world recently. I'm just really interested in it. And so when I was reading it, like all of those things, like you were just saying, Bobby, like reciprocation is something that you really enjoy. And you know, I give you something, you give me back something. For whatever reason, when I get that, when someone gives me something, I feel beholden to them. That is not an empowered place for me to feel. So I disregard that. Like, that was one thing that I took away from this book, is how often I do not fall prey to these, to all of these things. And it's because I think, because I've conditioned myself through from the time I was a child to know that I'm being taken, or to not to know, but to feel as though I'm being taken advantage of. So anytime that I'm being, that someone is trying to, that I feel like someone's trying to influence me in any of these, maybe not all of these ways, but a lot of these ways, I feel as though I'm being taken advantage of, and it turns me off.
Okay.
So, and I don't know, I mean, that might just be me, and my background. But I felt that a lot. I was extremely angry for the majority of reading this book, not because I felt like it wasn't useful, but because I was so mad at the, like he would throw out statistics and I would be like, how do people not see that they're being like manipulated? Like, how do you not see it? It's so blatant. Obvious to me.
So that's the other side of this, that bottom line is you generally want to be sold things because most people don't want to make decisions. Right. And so all of these things, like when people do these well, it makes your life easier. Like, you don't have to think about shit. It's like they did all the thinking for you.
Yeah. And also, if you're not like suspicious of everyone, like I seem to be, I'm realizing after reading this book, like, I'm like, damn, I'm suspicious of everything.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah. It's weird.
Well, like I especially love, because that was the thing I think I love most about this thing, because he uses all of the actual studies and like what he was taught. My favorite one is when he's talking about the people. I can't remember what they're called. The Hare Krishnas at the mall, yes, at the airport, and like going through like, holy shit, why that works psychologically? Like that's so weird.
It is weird, but and I see that it is a it goes back to the whole, you know, the place between stimulus and response. Someone hands you something, you automatically think I have to give them something in return, but and there's no space there, right? Like you don't fall into, most people don't fall into a space of thinking about their actions, right? They're just kind of on autopilot going through life. And that's why they can be affected by all of this so easily.
So like I said, okay, so I have a little bit of a different take on, say, like some of this, right? So like on the reciprocity one, you know, about not wanting to feel beholden. And so it feels like by me doing something, I'm putting pressure on you type of thing, which is true, but it's not. I mean, like the difference between manipulation and persuasion is, you know, like skill level, right? And whether it's something that you genuinely want.
Well, and relationship too, right? So like there are certain people who if they gave me something, I would be more than willing to give them something in return because they built a trusting relationship with me. But for someone that I don't know very well, that I'm just very kind of, I'm standoffish about it.
Well, so like, okay. How well are you at taking compliments?
I have gotten better, and to tell you the truth, I take a compliment because I know that I should. Like, I just let it roll off of me.
Yeah.
And it would depend. Like if someone was very, very kind of gushing to me, that would make me extremely uncomfortable. But if someone says, you do such and such well, I would say thank you and continue on. Like I just don't make a big deal about it. And I do that specifically because what I used to do was, no, I don't. And just make it a bigger deal than it even needed to be in the first place. So, yeah.
So like I have this joke. So one of the things that's the other side to the reciprocity is I have a lot of friends that are incredibly generous. It's just that's just who they are, you know, type of aspect. Right. And so my big joke is that I give the gift of letting people give. Right. Like I have one friend, he's bought me so many drinks. I mean, granted, obviously I don't go drink anymore and I live in a different state with him, but when I was 21 till basically 25, 26, every weekend, him and this other guy, we'd go out and I'd get plastered and I wouldn't buy a drink. And it wasn't women buying me drinks. It was these two guys. And they were, I don't know, they were codependent. They're alcoholics. They needed people to drink with them. Right. And he had a real hard time letting me buy him things, even though he had spent a ton of money on me. Right. And so eventually I just had to face it. I was like, dude, you know, shut the F up. I'm buying this for you and you're going to sit there and you're going to drink it and you're going to like it. And he finally got to the point where he's like, okay, fine. The ledger is this. But the way I think about it now is it's not like I don't have to give you money to return something, right? So if you buy me a drink when we're out at a bar, right? And if I know I got the first one, because it's just easier for me just for one person to buy two drinks than it is for two people at the same time to get it. I just do it that way, right? Because it's simpler. All right. And maybe I'm only having one drink, right? But I can receive that and I can send a return and like being fully engaged. You know, I mean, there are other things than money that you can.
Bobby, are you taking this to economics?
Of course he is.
It's probably my firmware level, right?
So it's in his DNA.
So I got into this argument a couple of years ago with a guy about who's trying to say, they're like an electrical co-op isn't a capitalist arrangement because no one profits off of it. And I told him he was a fucking idiot because everybody profits electricity off of it. They're all getting something out of the equation. That was the whole point. And some of these people, they just don't understand what capitalism is.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, dude, understand what a capitalist transaction is. You have to profit, otherwise it wouldn't happen.
I like that some people don't understand what capitalism is. All people don't understand. Well, that. There are four people.
But it's exactly,
and they're all in this room.
They're all in this call.
But it's exactly what Bobby just said. It's that there's a transaction happening. It's just not necessarily a like-for-like transaction. Like in his instance, you know, he's trading his time and energies hang out with these people, and that's what they get out of this. That's their side of the reciprocity. You know, he gets drinks out of it, they get camaraderie.
Yeah, you so want to hear something really? You want to hear something really crazy? I am pretty sure that my love language is giving. So how does that work? So
I love to give people stuff.
You know what I mean? Like that. That's how I show people that I care about them is by giving to them. But yeah, don't give me shit because I will freak out and feel like I owe you something.
So, I mean, like this goes, okay. So I got another friend who's, he's not super wealthy, but he's pretty well off. Right. You know, he makes $250,000 a year, right. You know, he's been making it for years. So when we go on trips, it's a bigger cost, you know, for me to go on these trips when we go out, you know, the plane ticket and the room, I kind of have to be real sneakily, you know, smart with my money on that. He gets a plane ticket just before, you know, he'll sit business class. He's in like the super nice hotels and he buys pretty much all the drinks. All right. Cause he knows it's a big deal for me to come because he's not paying for my plane ticket. Right. You know, so he'll pay for a lot of the entertainment there. And so, I mean, granted, like I said, I've known him a while and, you know, so that this is just, you know, just on that, but that's just how it is. Like he was from DC. He would come out to Denver and there'd be like four of us and he'd just buy everything. And he'd say, hey guys, I you know, it's, you know, he's coming home and he likes that we came out to go see him. Right. So he's like, the least I can do is, you know, pay for the drinks. And he's true on this was like, to pay for all four of us is cheaper than he was paying in DC for just for him. Right. So they're not, you know, like I said, so just because like me giving you something, I can give you something that's very
intangible.
It costs me nothing. Yeah, intangible, but it like literally cost me nothing, right? Other than time, right? You know, and you, the way you receive that is more about, is more of a reflection of you than actual the gift giver, right?
Right, correct. And,
so, I mean, so like with the whole reciprocity, like of how I've kind of internalized it is when people do nice things, I assume, like I assume it, the reciprocity goes both ways, is that people in general like to be giving when they can. A lot of people can't a lot of times.
Psychologically, of course you like, you feel good doing it.
Yeah.
Like giving, making, doing something nice for someone just inherently gives you a dopamine response.
Yeah, I mean, that's why
it's, like doing it.
That's why Ayn Rand used to always talk about, you know, selfishness versus selflessness, and that being a giving person is not selfless. That's not a thing that exists, because you get something in return. It might not be money, but you know, it is, you get, you know, a good feeling, you get a dopamine hit or whatever.
I could talk a lot about the reciprocity just because I like, to me, it's like there's two sides to it. And he kind of more focuses on, like I said, the whole, you feel beholden to it. And just to make sure that there is no doubt in anybody's mind, you come over the top on, you know, your payback. Right. Mm. Whereas if you don't have an insecurity about it and you take it as it's somebody like, hey, you know, this is just who they are. Maybe it's like, if it's a heavier, if you know it's a heavier cost and they still do it and they're not the type of people that are like self-destructive, you know, it's like my mother-in-law, we went out to a really nice restaurant on Wednesday night and we were going to, you know, we were telling them that we would split the bill. I mean, we, you know, but they're well off there. And then like my mother-in-law was like, no, I'm paying for it. I have too much money and I'm really happy you guys are came up to see us. You know, the giving, you know, like a lot of people, they focus on the negativity of it with this here. And I've kind of like gone a full 180 on where like I've become a better giver and I've become a better receiver because I understand these pulls and you know, the way these pulls and pushes, you know, operate. And it's just, it makes me happier because then I can enjoy a gift without like, you know, what was it? Sheldon from Big Bang Theory. He was like, when he was talking about how birthday gifts are stupid because you just give each other a gift until eventually one of you dies. And then that last gift of the person who has is the actual gift. It's the only one with the net benefit of it, right?
Yeah.
And but if you treat it just on like a dollar value like that, then yeah, it's like that. But if you treat it like, okay, you know, these are, you know, people I want to be around and I want to make sure that they feel good when they're around me. And that means that it has to be both give and take. You can't be just a taker or just a giver. You have to do both. And the better you are at both, the better you are at relationships.
Well, and so how about you even take this one step deeper and you take it to a karmic level? I mean, the idea is that every way in which you entice people to give more, even if it is yourself, entices the total, or it raises the total amount of giving in the world. You're just inevitably making the world a better place by creating more giving, more wealth for everyone.
I think about it like It's a Wonderful Life, right? I mean, I realize it's whole like communist propaganda, but like the aspect of like the end of the movie, like, you know, George Bailey had given his life to the town of Bedford Falls and making everybody's lives better, right?
Okay, but you say communist propaganda, but isn't that the whole point? Isn't that how they try to sell you on communism? Is this idea of everybody's going to give and everybody's going to give to everyone, and it's going to be this happy-go-lucky society where everybody gives.
Well, they're not wrong. The problem that they take out of it is the economic calculation problem, and because human beings have to dictate for themselves what something is worth, you can't do that in a communist way. You can only do that in a market way.
Right. Yeah.
Well, no. And Francis Capra, he was he was a commie. It, like, his dad lost his house to, like, creditors during the Depression, and, you know, and so this is not me being calling where I call everybody, you know, where I call every minarchist on up commies. This is factually true on that aspect of it. But that's what I think about karma is, as in, like, if you work to make people happier, and really every trade, it's a good trade if both people come away happy, right? And if you just work on those, I think that's what karma is. That's why karma comes back to you, right? You know, you lose, you know, if you treat people badly, you're going to run out of people to start working with you.
Well, and that's the idea of a free market anyway, right? Like the idea that of a win-win situation, right? I give you something, you get something in return that you're happy with, I'm happy with.
Or we wouldn't do it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So the other thing is, and people try to think of, oh, well, if I do something good, then something good will inevitably happen to me. And that's not technically what karma is. And that's why, like Sid Rice said, specifically, karma is the net balance of positive and negative in the world. And the more positivity you put out into the world, the more that changes the inherent balance. And it's a percentage thing where you're more likely to run into positivity if you put more of it out there, because there's just going to be more of it out there.
Well, and that too. And then you train yourself to see it, right? Exactly. I think that's the other thing. I think you can see whatever story you want to tell yourself about the world. I think you can find evidence to that story. So if you want to see a world where it's happier and more positive and people are helping each other out, there's plenty of it. And I think it's better to be in a world that way. So
go to Porkfest.
Did you go?
I couldn't. It'd been too soon since I was down at Childeberg, but I am planning on going Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest.
Yeah, me too. I was gonna go to Porkfest, and then I had to drop. I had some family stuff come up, and I.
The Porkfest is it's too long a thing.
I don't think like I'm just not a camper. And that seemed like a whole ton, 3,000 tons of people that I was just
it's a lot. It's super fun though, because they're the nicest.
I'm sure it is. Cool. Yeah. Well, what about, so we talked a lot about reciprocation. What about these other ones? Did you guys want to touch on those? Like liking, social proof, authority, the authority chapter, just, oh my God. I was in the car driving and just yelling at the car the whole time. Just like, how do people not see it?
Well, social proof is actually one that I'm finding less and less true as time goes on almost, or I find it's harder to find value in it because there's a lot of cultural signatures on that. That they don't exist anymore. Like, take note of how hard they've tried to push social proof through the pandemic, and how little anyone gave a fuck about the social proof. Like, when those Hollywood celebrities came out and sang Imagine, it was the most cringe inducing thing anyone had ever seen.
Yeah,
even the people on their sides, like, this is stupid.
Well, so, I think it's kind of gone over to the other, like, there's
authorities taking a lot of control, but social proof not so much.
Yeah, I think the whole celebrity thing, I mean, the internet has opened up so many eyes on what's actually happening in the world, and being able to see people who are like living in their mansions and their pools and going, I can't believe I have to stay in my house for 2 weeks. Like, fuck you, buddy. Like, are you kidding me? Like,
So I think you guys are misusing the social proof on this one. I think this is more the liking, right? Because these are more using the halo effect of the celebrities, right? Yeah. Right? Whereas I think the social proof is more applicable to within, like, Dunbar's number, right? And so from the standpoint that, like, my jiu-jitsu gym, right? It used to be a dominantly gi gym. So that's like the gi, you know, the karate outfit that everybody wear.
Like, you'd wear an Aikido.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we had a guy come in, and he's a big no-gi guy. So basically you wear shorts without pockets. So, you know, nobody have to worry about breaking their fingers. and then you wear like a rash guard, and then you it's closer to wrestling. It's more like catch wrestling, you know, because pinning doesn't matter. You're still going through the submissions and everything. There's just nothing to grip. There's the no gi. It's way slipperier. It's fun, and it's different kind of way. So it's different. The gym was not a big no gi gym when he first started. He was all about it. He pushed it. Now the biggest open mat we have is no gi Saturday morning. And we consistently, even through the pandemic, we had 20 plus people on the mats every Saturday morning. And so, and it's one of those things where it's like, the more people go, the more people go, right? Getting people to go on Friday nights or Sundays or whatever has just, but Saturdays, there was no open mat there 5 years ago, and he turned it into it. And then enough people started going that everybody else started going. So I think of it, that's the way I kind of think of the social proof. And then when you're talking to your friends and they're like, oh, like, okay, so whether it be asking about a doctor or about a car, or now granted, they try to hijack that with social proof-ish with like the way that they were, you know, oh, everybody else is, you know, doing this. But I think there's too much disconnect, and you can only, like, because of how far away you are from them, it has a much less effect as opposed to, you know, the people in your town, like going, you know, it's like, you know, going to a restaurant, right? Or going, you know, the grocery store. Well,
even now, you know, now with the masks, like that's a big thing, right? So if I go to a grocery store and I remember when the CDC was like, oh, if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask anymore. And I was kind of like, well, who's going to know? What are they going to ask me? And so I started noticing like so many more people were ready to take their masks off. And so I became more comfortable taking my mask off in a public place, because not that I was uncomfortable enough to wear a mask in the first place, but what I was much more uncomfortable with someone coming up to me and saying, why don't you have a mask on? Right.
Yes.
Once that changed and everybody, there were more people without masks on. Now I feel much more comfortable being able to go out without a mask on and not having the fear of, is somebody going to berate me in the Trader Joe's, which is not what you want.
Yeah. And that I think is a more apt example of the social.
Yeah.
I
mean, like,
they did there's all these pranks where they do where they'll have like six actors in an elevator, and the doors will close and everybody will like turn around, and like the guy that's not the actor will look around and see everybody turn around and then be like, oh, okay, and then he just turns around too to not face the door, right?
Yeah. Because or just that everybody whole, doing like there was some study that I heard of where it was like they would have actors and so you would have these cards or something, and they would be like, what's on this card? And it would like clearly be a dog, but everybody would be like, that's an elephant. Right.
And, all right, Bill Murray.
Yeah. And you're like, all of a sudden you're like, am I crazy? Like, am I like, it's like a form of gaslighting, right? Yeah. You're like, am I losing my mind, or are these people like, and then you end up going along with it, because if everybody else is saying it, this, then maybe I'm the problem. This chapter was also the one where they had, they talked about that insane situation where the woman was beaten to death and no one called anyone. No one did anything. There were like 20 bystanders or whatever. They called it the bystander effect.
Yeah, because everybody just assumes somebody else would do it.
Yeah.
That's an important one, because that's where, like, if you know you're ever in a situation where like somebody's like bleeding and you're the one like stopping the blood, you have to like look at somebody directly as like, Carrie, call 911.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
what
you have to give them each individual jobs.
And yeah, because I remember reading or listening. Well, I was listening to it and I was like, wow, that makes a lot of sense, because I know personally, when something like that happens, I've been in that situation with my little sister. She stopped breathing at one point while I was at home. It was me and my mom and I shut down. Like, there was no, I didn't know what to do. Like, it was the first time really that I'd been in a situation, like an emergency kind of situation like that, especially with my sister who my mom is like her caretaker, so she knows more. And I completely and totally shut down because my mom was there, and I knew that my mom was the one that knew what to do, right? I didn't know what to do. And my mom literally had to look at me and be like, Carrie, you have to get up and call the ambulance. Like it was crazy. And so I can see where in that kind of situation, that most people are either they're standing around thinking everyone else is already doing what needs to be done, somebody else will do it, or they're in shock as well. Like it's affecting them in some way, and you have to pull them out of it to get them to help you.
The other one that was interesting was the having like 20 people yell, right? You know, and have be as loud as they can. And was that not from this book? It's like having people like fans get together and like, yeah, right. And then what they did is they had everybody in a room go, yeah. And then they measured the decibel level. Then they separated everybody and had them do it individually. And they added the decibel level up, and the individual level is much higher.
Interesting. All the individual levels combined.
If you sum it up, well, because now it's just on me, so I got to go as loud as I can. I can't.
That makes sense. I don't think that was in this, but that's the same.
I could have sworn it was in this. Okay. Did they have the tipping in it? Tipping. So, like, I don't know why restaurants, their systems are stupid since they don't allow people to separate checks. You get better tips.
Yep.
If you separate the checks.
That was one part of the book that I was like, man, I wish I knew this shit when I was waiting tables. And I literally had a thought at one point, I was like, I should start waiting tables again because I could make bank. Like that story that he told about that one guy that was like, had like four different techniques, right? And it just depended on who his customer was, and he would switch it. I was like, damn, that is so smart. And I could tell, like, just as a person who's been in a wait staff position, I waited tables for a good like 4 or 5 years. I can totally see how that would work. Right. I mean, I had my way of doing it, and I made pretty good money. Like my whole idea was don't get in the way and anticipate needs. Right. But there are a lot of people, I was never a talker, right? I would never like come up and talk to you all the time. But I have a student, a girl who just graduated from the school that I work for. She was in my practicum, and I still talk to her, and she waits tables, and she's a talker, and she makes a ton of money. But I think it does. It depends on who you're talking to, which is why I found that part of the book so cool, is that this guy had like four different techniques just depending on who he was waiting on. What about scarcity? Like I see that in advertising all the time, and I laugh at it because I don't believe it. I think we've gotten to a point to where, especially in advertising, where I just don't believe that is a thing anymore. Like that count, you know, you click on something and that clock starts ticking down, and you're like, fuck you. That's not true. I just don't believe it. It's like so many people have taken that scarcity idea and ran with it to the point to where it just doesn't work anymore, I don't think.
Until you really want something.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, was toilet paper scarce? Right. So, I mean, the way I think about it is, you know, because of all of the regulation and the taxes and money printing and whatever, they have interfered with pricing and they've interfered with everything. So our ability to determine whether something is scarce or not is not as good as it should be. So now, I mean, like I said, with that ticking clock, this is a deal that's only going to last for this long, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. Like, I mean, I've used coupons that are like a month old.
Yeah.
You know, the checker will scan it because they don't want to piss me off. Right. I can't remember if it was this book, but there was a thing on like, if something's written down, we tend to like, oh, that's a rule we can't break. Right. But whereas if it's a verbal rule, it feels like it's more, you know, there's a little more play in it. Yeah. But a lot of even the written rules are kind of like, you just have to get past the first no, and then you're, and then it's a yes, right? That's the way I think about, like, with the scarcity stuff. Like, is it something to where we actually have to probe whether or not it is scarce? 2 weeks ago, or just before I left Door County, Rob Schneider was in town, and every show sold out like crazy. It's just a little comedy club where I live. So me and some friends, we were going to it, and then he got like a movie part. So we had to cancel two of the days and reschedule them for the week after, but I was in Door County, so I couldn't go. But when we were signing up and we were there, like right when it happened, like right when it started, the shows we wanted sold out before we could get to it. Right. And we were trying, we were trying to get to it. So there are scarce things, you know, and it was like, we were on top of it and we still didn't get it. So, it's one of those things, like, it's like what Nikki said, like if your desire for, if you not getting it is a really bad thing, scarcity is super effective.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, granted, when you see that clock, you're probably like, I probably don't need it.
Yeah, just like, whatever. Like,
this is something I want. This is something I want, right? And so they're trying to create it. And they're trying to create it, you know.
It's like a false scarcity that it just surprises me. People actually fall for it. I think that's one of the things that really, like, angered me about this book is how many times I see people falling for these tricks when they're being used as tricks.
Do you think it might be fatigue, though? I mean, you're constantly being bombarded by all of these techniques that, you know, sometimes I would think your defenses are just down.
Yeah.
So
that might be it. Yeah, for sure. I mean, if this book was written in 1984 and literally everyone who's in sales and marketing has stolen all of these techniques and put them into practice. Yeah. In 2021, we're probably pretty tired of seeing this all the same stuff.
I think a lot of these is they're, you know, when you think of logical fallacies, right? What are logical fallacies really anyway? They are shortcuts, right? So we have these shortcuts because we don't have the time to go through everything logically step by step. So we're like, oh, my local doctor. All right, I'm going to do authority. He says this. I don't have the time or the expertise of researchers, so I'm going to trust my doctor. All right, my mechanic. I'm going to trust my mechanic, right? I've known this guy, you know, so it's like I don't have time to like do all the work. So, and if you don't have experience and you haven't gotten burned by these tactics, then you don't know that they're hijacking actual, you know, there's reasons why these shortcuts exist.
Yeah.
Right? We have finite RAM. Right. And most people never bother to learn it. And so, I still feel the pull of some, you know, when these happen, I feel them. I'm aware of the feeling now. So now I can I know how to get out of it, but like the commit and consistency ones, like they try to get, you know, the little sign in the window. All right. And then they are able to put these big signs, you know, on the front lawn.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where I think it's funny because this was where I remember in school when they would say the slippery slope is like, it's not real. All right. That's a logical fallacy. And then I learned about commit and consistency. I said, this is literally a slippery slope.
Yeah.
This is literally a slippery slope. And there's science to back it. So while it's logic, you know, it's a logical fallacy. Humans are not logical. We don't follow the rules of logic.
Yeah, that whole idea from the book where it was like there you sign a petition and then all of a sudden you're like letting like this giant billboard be put up in your town or something, like just but it was very much like I think the example in the book was getting you in some way to commit to being a better, like cutting your energy costs, I think was one of the things, right? Like I want to cut my energy costs down. And then later on, they were like, we're going to give you, like the idea was a reciprocity, right? Like we're going to give you a prize or a reward, some sort of a reward for doing this. And then even after they took that reward away, people still, because now they've made a commitment to being that.
Yeah.
The thing, right. The, and taking yeah, it on.
Well, there's another thing with the commit and consistency that I kind of like is, it's like the idea of like, I saw this one video on TikTok, and it wasn't from TikTok, but that's where I saw it. And it was like, you know, you don't want to be the type of person that writes 2 pages a day, because that you're going to fail at that. You got to be the person that's a writer. A writer just writes, right? So, but how do you become, you know, you kind of like, how do you get that flywheel going, right? So that's where, when I talk about like friction, right? So I need to lower the friction to do that first step. And that's where you look at like every affiliate marketing program, right? You know, they get you with like a $5 or $8 thing. And then, oh, now we have this another thing for $100 or $200 and $900 and $30,000. And they started at $8, right? Yeah. You know, they just get you to take that first baby steps from, what about Bob? Baby steps.
But if it's a good program, then you don't mind. By the end of it, you're happy to give them your money.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. I mean, I say that to Brett all the time. Where do I, let me give you all my money, take all my money. Because I have, like, I've listened to him for so long. I love his ideas. I feel like a kinship with him. And so it doesn't matter what, like, mindset and mastery, right? Like, it doesn't matter what he comes up with. I'm already in. Before he even tells me what it is.
See, you're already, you're prey.
I am. I'm prey.
A horrible predator. You're prey. He's just taking you, using all these tactics on you, and you don't even know it.
It's terrible. It's strange how it works. And I feel like there are some, like, again, I think it goes back to the relationship and creating that relationship. Like, if I just met Brett last week, I wouldn't give him $200, right? But because I've listened to School Sucks for as long as I have, I know I have this relationship and this expectation, I guess, of what he's going to do and how I'm, and that I will get something out of it that's beneficial to me.
So here's something to ponder. Now, all these things, people think of them as being used to make people do things that they don't want to do, when they could just as easily be used to make people okay with doing something that they want to and should do.
Yeah,
absolutely, 100%.
Like, it makes it okay for you to give in to that thing.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Well, I mean, that's where like a lot of sales books, like, because the way we think of sales, right, we think of it as like the dirty car salesman or like the vacuum salesman, or the high pressured salesman, you know. And you look at any actual good salesman out there, and they're not like that. I mean, sure, you can use it for evil, right? But it's just a tool. It's like a hammer. You can hammer in a nail or you can hammer in a head, right? And
well, what's the first thing that any sales book will tell you? You better believe in the product you're selling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't believe in it, you're never going to convince anybody else.
I mean, there's a reason why, like, I don't enjoy marketing for marketing's sake. I work in marketing for a theater. And I do that because I love theater. And so, therefore, it's easy for me to sell that. And that's why I wanted to work in theater, is because it's something that I'm passionate about. I don't think I would like going and working at a marketing agency because I'm not passionate about marketing. I'm passionate about theater. I just have marketing to use as a tool.
Yeah. I mean, like, to me, it's like, I used some of these tactics that I picked up from this book and from the POA stuff to, you know, meet my wife and, you know, marry her. And I think she's happy. Right. So,
I should find out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Nick's totally right on this. Right. So like, if I have a product that works, that makes people's lives better, all right, I am doing them a disservice by not becoming an expert in them and how they need to be sold. Mm-hmm. And how that they, you know, because I have a way, there's a way to sell me. And it's funny. So I'm going to bring it back to the book on the commitment consistency with Brett. I was never a Patreon guy, right? But it's really funny. So like the Lions of Liberty, That was the first thing I ever did Patreon, because they had the conspiracy shows back in the day. They used to do them all the time, and they were a lot better. They used to be a lot better than they are now, on those shows specifically. And I signed up, you know, for Patreon for that. And then I was already in the system. And then Brett was asking, was like, hey, if you like my shows, could you chip in a buck or two a show? And I'm like, you know, I've already done it for this one, and I really like this show. But it took me taking that one step forward to be in the type of person that, you know, gives money to creators, right? I wasn't that person 5 years ago, 6 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things. And then, I mean, if we're gonna, you know, be critical of Brett, right? Brett hasn't embraced a lot of these tactics to get Brett, more.
Yeah.
Brett is horrible with his email.
Brett, if you're listening, here is your intervention. I completely agree. I think it's possible that it goes back to that idea, because I know I've heard him say numerous times that he doesn't want people to feel like they're being taken advantage of. And I think that's kind of what it comes down to.
I get two emails from Tom Woods every day.
Oh my God. I get at least one a day from Tom Woods.
I'm not even
a huge Tom Woods fan.
Oh, by the way, I was adding that. I'm not a huge Tom Woods fan.
Yeah.
But I still get two emails a day from him. I would love Brett to send me an email a day.
Yeah.
But back to the reciprocity. I don't want to make this like a shitting on Brett thing. The thing about it though is it's like,
I thought we were doing it, Brett, we'll give you more money if you talk to us.
Oh yeah. All right. Well, I guess we could, that's one way to, that's a very upside way of looking at it.
I thought we were trying to incentivize him to give him more money.
But it's like, okay, so his, like, I am a far better communicator now because of Brett.
Yeah.
Okay. 100%. And I feel a lot of people could become better communicators if they listen to Brett. Now, I wish Brett believed in that as much as I know it, to where he's willing to actually maybe make a few, maybe cross the line on a few people. They're like, you know, because it's that worthwhile to make yourself better.
All right, post-libertarian.
Right? And what?
I said, all right, post-libertarian.
Post-libertarian. I don't know who that is. So.
I don't know what that means. Explain yourself.
Oh, really? Oh, no. God. That's another discussion.
Is that what I am? Day. Because I've...
No, it's the whole Matt Rothbard and Vin Armani or whatever pseudonym he gave himself this past week.
Oh, yeah. I started listening to that one podcast.
Trying to make Christianity the new thing and everybody Republicans.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying, though, on that is like, to me, I think all roads of libertarianism, and this is like an all roads of leads to becoming better yourself, right?
You know, like, I got into it because it was self-help. That was my whole reason. It was like, if everybody's talking about being better people, and they're like, let's be better people. Let's be smarter. Let's be the next level man.
Yeah. Well, that's why I was interested in School Sucks. I mean, I'm not a parent, and I'm 20 years or more outside of school. I mean, that's not really the draw. The draw was the self-help stuff.
Yeah, that definitely me with that too. Like I'm much more interested in the personal development side of everything that Brett is doing.
Well, I was gonna say, like, I got hooked on Brett because I think he was on Tom Woods. I heard him on Tom Woods. And I think what hooked me to him was his anti-Lincoln and his like Breitbart podcast. And you know, the episode where he talked about Breitbart, he went into that, and I'm like, whoa, that like blew my mind. And then it was just everything else was like, I just happened to go on this journey, right? You know, but it was that, you know, the whole Tim Pool gravity well that he talks about a lot is what sucked me in. And then I stayed for internal family systems, you know, and
yeah,
logical fallacies. And like I said, and like him talking about like when he talks about like when he, you know, at the Wisconsin thing where he talked to that one teacher, and he talks about it as an ambush, and he talks about how just like vomiting onto people. And I think about that one a lot because he talks, and I was like, cause I've done that every once in a while. I do it still, happens a lot less, but it was really, it was all of that that like got me into that. And it's just one of those things where it's like, he thinks about it from a standpoint of self-defense, right? So he thinks about, you know, self-defense. So you can't use the, you know, for him to use these tools to convince somebody to buy his product is like him being like the evil people, right? I mean, that's kind of like the manipulators. Like, then he's like one with the Rockefellers and Rothschild, right? Because he's selling something.
Well, and that's a pull. Like, I feel that too, just as a creative person. I mean, I don't know how many times, and Nikki, you might feel this way too, like with music or theater, like asking people to give you money for, like, there's something about that. Now, I think I've gotten over it, right? Because I realize I have to freaking eat and live. So, but yeah, there's something about that idea. And I think that's just kind of instilled in us.
That's never what you're trying to sell. If you're trying to sell music or theater, by the way, you're trying to sell an experience.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Or at least that's what you should be trying to sell, because that's what people are buying.
Okay, folks, there is an additional 45 minutes to this conversation, but it takes a turn right here away from the book and into a political discussion that I thought was very interesting, but it will only be available to our supporting listeners. Look at me taking the advice of the people on the call right here at the end. All right, I'll be back soon with Nathan Frazier for the last free episode of Emotional Manipulators for Hire. And a couple other shows will follow that, so stay tuned. Thanks for listening. Take care.
And I wish someone could help me, but the decision is mine. And my morals and emotions are hard to combine. And there is no easy way out, so I'll let it just ride to the day. Go by my mind, oh my heart. This is so confusing, it's tearing me apart. Time it will show. Time it will show.